Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for waiting for this live stream. It's like just delayed by a few minutes. And I hope those of you who are watching on YouTube and social media can see us just okay. YouTube has been really reliable. I don't know what's going on with LinkedIn, but hopefully you're able to find this. Let me know. I'm here sitting with my new friend, Kevin Fernando. And Kevin, I met through YouTube, believe it or not, as I was searching for content repurposing videos, and I found his and immediately just felt really resonated to his brand, the way that he creates content. So I really want this opportunity for us to have a casual chat. Please welcome, list your comments and questions. Your face is not going to show up on our live stream, so don't feel nervous at all. Ask your questions. And before we get started, I want to briefly introduce Kevin. Welcome, Kevin. Hello.
Thanks for having me, Faye. Excited to be here today and chat with everybody. Glad we got connected.
Totally agree. I'm so thrilled. And we have your audience here joining with us as well. And it's a great opportunity for us to really get to know each other. And if you're new to Kevin's work, well, he helps everyday people create online businesses while working part-time or full-time. So especially if you still have a full-time job, I really want you to know that this is not just for full-time content creators only. He has been a serial entrepreneur and digital marketer for the past 12 plus years, from a six-figure annual e-learning agency to building and selling e-com stores. Kevin is here to share his experience with no reservation as an entrepreneur, as a content creator, in a time where building a personal brand, I agree, is no longer optional. This episode is particularly helpful, as I mentioned, if you're interested in working both full-time or part-time while building your personal brand. We want to talk about why it's absolutely possible. I think we're going to dive into corners such as affiliate marketing, content marketing, full stack content marketing. For those of you who think, well, I don't know how to like niche down so far, or I'm really interested in, you know, webinar and podcasts and YouTube, kind of all the above. Can I really choose all of them? So we can really like play around. So welcome, Kevin. I'm just so thrilled that I'm sitting here with another content creator and we're here to help others answer their questions.
Yeah, totally. I feel like, Faye, you know, we've chatted a few times now and I'm so glad you put this together. I'm like, yeah, I think just riffing off of each other, we can probably really bring the audience a lot of value in this session, I'm feeling.
I totally agree, because I mean, look at the tutorials and content we create on YouTube. We have to be so fast paced with the intro, the hook, content, and call to action, and done. And people don't really get to know you like as a real person. And I just found you very authentic, even during our first conversation. Be so transparent. So I know you're currently working on something really exciting. It's going to be launching in 1 to 2 weeks. If people watching this a little bit later, they can get to know that. But may I invite you to maybe chat about the thinking behind and what you're putting together and why you're putting together something like that?
For sure. And you know, firstly, Faye, thank you for the great introduction. And I'll just pick it up right where you left off. So quickly, I do run, as Faye mentioned, I run a YouTube channel, and I've been doing that for a long, long time, but I took many, many years off, and it's interesting, and I'll come back to it. But basically, I used to run, I've wanted to kind of be free and work for myself since I was about 21, and I've built a bunch of businesses. I built an e-learning agency and ran that for 6 years. That's way before e-learning was easy and they had all these cool tools that could do it. This was when you had to hard code everything. Mm-hmm. I've built e-commerce stores and all kinds of things. And the challenge is that these were really hard to run with limited time sometimes. And a lot of the time when I was doing this, I still had full-time jobs. And so, you know, the transactional nature of it all was really kind of burning me out. And then since then, I've, to put it shortly, I've really fallen in love with subscription-based models. And so I ran a subscription box business. I even tried my hand at at an app that was a recurring software business. And then I fell into sort of affiliate marketing in a recurring way. And so the training I'm coming up, you know, that's a short version. I could talk about it for an hour here, but the training I have coming up is really just going to talk about how you can build automated income streams with subscription-based products.
Oh, nice. So what are some of the subscription-based products would you recommend people kind of look into? I know there are a really big variety here, and perhaps what is like that 101 version for people who are very new to a subscription model business.
Perfect. Yeah. So I mean, I can just say like, I'll just like, everyone's familiar with content subscriptions, whether that's Disney, Netflix, Then you're probably familiar with like a software-based ones. Like if you notice, a Microsoft has moved from having Office as like a one-time thing to now it's a subscription. Adobe's a subscription. So much software is instead of like a one-time thing, now a subscription. You see like Amazon Prime and Walmart Plus and Uber Eats. Then they're the kind of memberships. And then even like you see everything is subscriptions, consumables, like you hear about Razor subscriptions. You know, I have a Peloton. So if you're familiar, it's like, I have a Peloton. So if you have, it's basically a bike and it's got a screen and it's got a subscription and you can, you know, you pay for the bike, but you still got to pay for the content every month. So everything is kind of moving in the subscription direction. And, you know, companies love it because it's like predictable income, it's increased customer loyalty, and you get lower acquisition costs because people renew every month. So those are kind of the ones that everyone kind of knows about. But as an entrepreneur, you know, you can't go build a fancy software. And yeah, that's really, really hard. I tried, I failed. I didn't fail, but it was extremely, extremely difficult. It was a long road, but you know, it didn't give me the returns I wanted. And then the other part of it is you can't build a Netflix. That's not realistic, right? So you know, what I share with everyone is how to do two things, right? So a recurring revenue affiliate marketing. And so those are affiliate products that pay you on a monthly basis and membership sites. How you can kind of make a membership site, and the real trick to it is how do you sell that in a sustainable way that's not, you know, spending all day posting in that membership site. So those are kind of the two vehicles, if you will, that and I have a whole model around how to incorporate those two together. But that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely is very intriguing to me. I was just having a conversation around with a colleague of mine, Anna, talking about building a community and the challenges that comes with building a community, as you know, as well as some of my followers may know that I have an academy on Podia. And literally, like you mentioned, within the past, I think, few months, I considered, instead of selling individual courses, of course, there are a lot of free resources, but instead of selling, you know, a course for $197 or whatever, I decided that I actually switched the whole thing to a subscription, like for $97. Anybody can consume anything that is there now and what I'm going to create in the future. So I don't know why I did that, but I just wanted the content to be more accessible. So could you maybe talk about maybe even the pros and cons or even some of the challenges, like you mentioned, about how to make selling a membership site, a subscription, sustainable?
Yeah, it's a great question, right? I think one of the advantages, when it comes to a subscription and what makes it sustainable is often with a $1,000 online course. A lot of the time we have that apprehension, am I an expert? Can I sell the $997 or $497 online course? Am I good enough, right? But with, as you mentioned, Faye, like a $99 or $49 subscription, the barrier is a lot lower for the person who's subscribing, but at the same time, it's also, you know, you don't have to, it's the expectation isn't that you're going to teach them everything in, you know, in 1 month of a subscription. So one thing I'll just say right off the bat is one of the advantages there is that it's something that it has, you can start sooner. You only have to have 1 month of content. And you can just build it month after month. And so I would say that, you know, that's really one of the advantages. Another thing is, you know, there's this idea that you got to create like countless amounts of content, but you really don't have to. You know, there's a lot of research done in this space. And one of the things is, ironically, the number one reason that people leave services like Netflix, anything, is content overload. And so having too much content can actually be pretty harmful for you. So, I mean, to touch on your question, you know, were you asking, Faye, how to de-risk kind of, or can you rephrase the question? I want to make sure I covered it.
Yeah, sure. You know, any pros, I think we talk about pros of consistency, expected, measurable income, but perhaps what are some of the cons or challenges associated?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it's absolutely. I think one of the things is that it's not, no business is passive income in the sense that you're sleeping on a beach and you're just getting paid, right? I think what people mean by that is you're not trading your time for money. You're always still working, but you're not trading your time for money, right? So all things being equal, of course, with a subscription-based business, there's very smart ways to do this where you're only working maybe 3 hours a week when you're engaging with the community, the kind of content you create, all of those kinds of things. But there is still a maintenance factor to it that's mm-hmm. rather than something that you create one time. So again, the advantage was that you're not spending 6 months creating an online course, which is your flagship course. But the disadvantage, of course, is that to a degree, there is some work. But in a way, I actually think this is one of the biggest advantages because this is something I learned in the software world, and it's called customer discovery, where oftentimes, you know, people are not in touch with your customer. You're not in touch with their needs. And mm-hmm. so when you run a membership, you get to have a deep understanding, Faye, like you run one, right? Like you get a much deeper, I'm sure you might say, you get a deeper understanding of what's actually resonating. It's more timely. It's more up to date. You're mm-hmm. actually, and most importantly, you're actually helping people, right? I mean, because it's so easy to sell it's, you know, you can sell $1,000 online course and mm-hmm. that might be the only transaction you ever have with that person. And even if you don't end up helping them, well, mm-hmm. you still got their money, mm-hmm. right? Whereas here with the membership, I think if they're showing up and they're coming it back month after month, you know, it's really an opportunity to make sure that you build confidence in yourself that you're actually helping people. And the one final thing I can say that it's a huge advantage if we're just talking funnels and mechanics and whatnot, and there's more to it I talk about in my program, but with a membership, you can offer a free trial. Mm-hmm. With an online course, you can't, there's no trial of the course. With the membership, you can offer a free trial just like everyone else does. And if mm-hmm. you can blow them away in that first month, or whatever period you want, then there's an opportunity there to keep serving them.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think about the fact that once you have a membership model, you are closer to your customers. And it's interesting that for me, I don't feel like it's a skill I really hone in on. It's more like they're showing up, they're buying this annual subscription at any given time. They may have seen a video 3 weeks ago or, you know, or a week ago, and they're kind of all coming in at different times, which is perhaps a challenge with my community that I'm not really moving people towards the same goals at the same time. Whereas an example I've seen that's quite successful is with a colleague of mine called Carly Agar, who's running these, helping people transition in customer success jobs. And she's, I believe, you know, maybe I'm misquoting a little bit, but her membership runs, you know, up to 6 months, and people have full access to her online courses and getting support directly from coaches. And the fact that there are things, you know, when you move from people from A to B, it just takes time. And I think having a community there to really be there to support them is quite essential. So like, Kevin, do you feel like, you know, you need a certain number of followers, community, you know, sort of fans, followers that's already there before people can actually consider building a community? If you're watching this, please ask any questions too.
Yeah. And first of all, it's a fantastic point, Faye, you touched on there. And I want to say that that's, you know, I reflecting on it and you know, it's something sometimes you know you don't always think about, but that's one of the most challenging parts with the membership site is how do you add value early? Because with the online course, whether you know you're going to learn soup to nuts how to do some one specific thing, usually, right? Lose 20 pounds in 6 weeks, or how to start a Shopify store, or whatever it is. But with a membership site, if you only have a month's worth of content, is that person going to be, if they're a true beginner, mm-hmm. are they going to get to that point where they're like feeling that they got an outcome yet? Right. And so I think there's an element there with the membership site that's a little bit trickier to get people to the value initially if you don't have a lot of content in the start. So that mm-hmm. to say, right. And so there's a balance there. But yeah, you know, I think it's an interesting question. You know, if you don't have an audience, can you start one? Well, I would actually say that it's probably easier to start one than an online course because mm-hmm. if you do a free trial, what does the person have to lose, right? Someone mm-hmm. is much more willing to say, hey, I don't really know about this person. They don't have 40 testimonials on their website, but I'm not going to give them $1,000, right? So I think now it comes down to traffic, right? Of course, if you don't have an email list, then you got to earn it or pay for it. That's the reality, right? So I think if you have a budget, and you have a smart funnel that can, you know, educate people about the program and get them into the membership and your numbers work out, I think you can absolutely do it with a zero audience. Mm-hmm. But, what I would recommend though is, you know, you actually start to help a few people for free before you build your membership, right? Maybe start doing some content, maybe try out your method on a few people, see if you can create some success there. And that'll just give you the confidence to know the kind of content you're doing. But I would argue that it's actually easier to go with that than say the alternative, which is often an online course.
Yeah. And also I think we touch upon a variation of seeing ourselves as experts, have trained people to go from A to B. But I also realized, like, when I first started a community online in 2017, I was a podcaster with about 3 years of experience at the time. There are also other podcasters thinking about starting. I did not feel like I could claim expertise in the area, yet I was more like an organizer, as a facilitator, who basically gathered people who shared the same interest to say, hey, I'm not here to promise anything. It's more like on a weekly basis, and later on it was bi-weekly, that we invite experts, we invite each other to share our experiences. So in a way that I really had, you know, not a lot of following and not a ton of expertise, but the community was really still growing and it was going really well. A lot of the relationships, you know, lasted for a long time. You know, part of that group continued. We kind of evolved into, interestingly enough, podcasters into now creative entrepreneurs. We meet once a month right now, and people from like all over the US and the world. Wow. I just think, yeah, I think developing long-term relationships and allowing ourselves to grow and for the group to evolve, that's really interesting. If we didn't have that community or membership at the beginning, I think we would probably have lost in touch very quickly and not really have that shared vision or ongoing communication.
Yeah, Faye, I've looked at, you know, we are on, I believe this is episode 347, which is just amazing for what you and I think, you know, from, you know, candidly, like, you know, for the audience, you know, Faye and I have only got connected just a few months back, but I think that's your superpower, Faye. I think it's your relationship building, your ability to kind of authentically connect with people and bring things out of them, right? And just be able to be very present with them. I think it's your superpower. And I think that's why, as a content creator, I think you've been so successful. One of the reasons.
Oh, thank you. Well, speaking of which, we connected and I wanted to paint a picture for people who are thinking about building their personal brand because they feel like I need a superpower. I need an insane, you know, amount of skill sets. I use the metaphor of like being a triple threat in acting. You can dance, act, and sing. Yeah. Whereas I realize being a YouTuber, being a podcaster, a lot of people don't realize you're not just doing audio. You're not just interviewing another human being. Yeah. Instead, you're really running a business, believe it or not. And especially when you have that vision, that mindset earlier on, it actually helps you. So I would love to hear your origin story. You mentioned, I didn't realize that you were running your YouTube channel for a long time. You took years off. And now your channel is monetized. Like, could you maybe talk about the beginning? Because a lot of people listening will be like, well, I've been thinking about doing this for years. I just don't think I have what it takes to start.
Yeah, it's so interesting. So yeah, it's a great question. So, I always share my failures and my successes. So basically, back in 2015, a buddy of mine, he showed me his YouTube channel. And what was so awesome about it is, I won't get too much into the algorithm, but I was just amazed by how his videos were just working for him 24/7. Like, you shoot a YouTube video, if it's a evergreen or, you know, a search focused video, you're just going to keep getting content. And so then I actually ended up making my own YouTube channel and I ran it for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. But then I stopped doing that and I went off to build this sales app. And that was a long journey, and I talked about it earlier. But then just back in maybe just three years ago now, one day I was curious and I decided to check in on my YouTube channel, and it was crazy. I had videos from 2015 that were still bringing me traffic. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there like, wow, okay, this is, I think I should have, if only I would have been focusing on this for the last 7 years, right? So you had kind of like that kick me moment. But yeah, so that's when I, you know, I went through, I learned a lot of things. And then I realized that evergreen content, you know, we talked about, Faye, like how do you do this in a sustainable way? Evergreen content, in my opinion, that's why I love YouTube so much, is, you know, it's the best way to not have to post. You know, you hear things like Instagram and whatnot, like, hey, you got to post 3 times a day or 6 times a day every 20 minutes. You hear all these things, like even sometimes TikTok, even though TikTok is now like the Gen Z search engine, which is a really interesting trend, but so that's kind of how I got back into YouTube, and I started to dabble and kind of find my lane. But it's an interesting story. So it's like, yes, I've been doing this since 2015, but I took about 6 years off.
6 years off. Hey, you know, sometimes I gotta say, I was just telling talking to a friend of mine earlier about, like, almost like a related to relationship, you break up with someone, your friend, someone you may date for a short period of time, and later on you reunite and decided that you are better off together. You know, yeah. Sometimes I feel like that break, it's really necessary. Otherwise, sometimes I feel like, for me, I've been pretty consistent on YouTube since 2019. And there are moments where, like, oh, is this effort well spent? Are there better channels and things like that? You do question it. But I agree with you. Once you see the results, especially you have a business mindset, creating your content, you go, wow, in comparison, that's because we also love analytics and we measure, you look at YouTube versus, and like you said, anywhere else, wow, the evergreen power of the content and even affiliates. I haven't, for instance, really done any content videos for Restream, which is the app we're using right now. Every single month in the past 6 months, I was seeing, like, so many leads are coming in from articles and videos created from 2021. It's just crazy to me, given all the new features, AI, this and that. Yeah.
Yeah. You're so right. I mean, it's there's that, you have to experience it, but I think a lot of people, I think the part where, you know, we're painting the idea that, like, hey, it's that the end state is worth it. But I think a lot of people fall off in that early grind, right? Because YouTube makes you really show them that you're consistent before they start giving anything.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, heartache and heartbreak with YouTube.
And then, Faye, you touched on it. I mean, the number of skills you have to learn. Listen, I still think it's the best use of your time if you're doing organic, but the number of skills that you have to learn, I think that's where it has a big learning curve, right? I think, like, that's where I think the biggest challenge when I think about the apprehension people have with YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to dive in a little deep, and I've been seeing different people hopping on. So feel free to drop your questions. You're not going to go live. You're not live streaming with us. So no worries. And I just want to really kind of dive a little deeper with YouTube because, you know, there are a lot of misconceptions, like, over the years. And frankly, there's just so many changes in terms of the strategy direction, even from world famous marketing experts. Things literally switched and completely swapped as of the beginning of this year, which is, you need to niche down even further, to all of a sudden there are numerous videos coming out that say, you know what, you should really broaden your reach. You're niching down too much. You really should focus on your interests. You're like, all of a sudden people are like, what? You know, I was really surprised to kind of hear that, because it's something I really believe in. And I want to really talk about the idea of full stack content marketing that I've been seeing so many different, you know, positive results for us to really understand SEO, do the research, blog, create videos, embed our videos in our blog post, and, you know, running a couple of webinars and creating, you know, YouTube videos as well as podcasts. And this is a video podcast or somebody called a live stream. And together, you know, our traffic is up like 4 or 5x on FaceWorld, which is rising tides, you know, lifting all boats. And I wish more people could really understand the power of full stack. And just wondering what your thoughts on that is, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, maybe we should just to unpack, just to make sure that, you know, I'm following and everyone, what would you, like, how would you define full stack? Do you mean kind of being kind of omnipresent, being everywhere on social, or how would you define it?
Great question, because first of all, I come from a development, kind of a computer science background, and this is a full stack as a term is very focused on tech and development. Mm-hmm. It means someone who knows the front end development, back end. And for people who are listening to this, watching this, means, you know, on your iPhone, you love this app. It's not just the visual and, you know, the look and feel of the app, but also what's going on the back end, the calculation, the analytics that are going on. It's at the time, you know, not a lot of people, not a lot of developers who can do both. And when they can, they're superstars at a company. So we borrow, my producer Herman and I just borrow this term and move that into marketing. So it really means a number of things. So number one, to define it, it is the ability to be able to do audio, video, you know, webinar, to be able to facilitate, moderate, so, and to be able to write, to be able to design. Sure, if you use Canva, no faults to you, right? Like, you use the tools that is available. So that's one area. The other is actually like end to end. Do you know how to strategize your content, really plan your content, staying organized, communicating with teams, and understand the analytics? Some people are like, oh, I hate numbers. I can't work with Excel. I can't do that. And last but not least, multi or omni-channel, you know, what you said, Kevin, is do you have the ability or the understanding of different platforms, not just trying to be everywhere all at once for the sake of it? Oh, I'm on YouTube. I'm on Instagram. You know, I'm full stack. It doesn't mean that way. You have to know how to measure and how to go about your efforts so that is consistent and sustainable. So it's a lot of things.
Yeah, no, definitely. I come from the SaaS world too. We could talk about that. I totally get you with the whole full stack analogy. I like you applying it to kind of the content creator world too. You know, I think it's interesting, right? I think video is a little different in that sense than, say, writing, because I think the one differentiator with video, at least when you start, is that, you know, I simplified in a way and say, you know, there's kind of the performer and the operator, mm-hmm. right? So you got to be both the strategist, the performer, and the operator, right? Like, you got to be the person on camera, and that is a very particular skill set. And mm-hmm. then, of course, you need to know how to deploy that in a strategic way and all that. So yeah, I do think that it is such a tremendous skill set to learn, and it's not as difficult as many people think. And I think that's right. The thing to get across, right? Because I think some people always want, it's not like blogging where you can just outsource stuff, right? I think there's a deep level of expertise and sort of personalization you can take when you are the one talking about the subject matter, and when you're researching the content and you're planning it, and it ties into your message, and mm-hmm. then there's a strategic initiative that you can follow off. So, you know, all that to say, I think being a full stack creator is so important when you're first starting out, because you don't have the budget and all of these things to hire an editor. And keep in mind, I want to say that you can at some point, right? There are some jobs that you can start outsourcing your editing maybe a little bit. Maybe, you know what I like to talk about, content syndication. Maybe you make a long form video and then you outsource cutting it up into the vertical slices. There's things you can definitely outsource, but I think it's such a tremendous skill set to even just understand the end to end before you start to say, hey, which pieces can I take off my plate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really interesting, right? You mentioned that, like, getting help. True. That's the biggest struggle. So a lot of people realize, I don't have the skill set. I'm interested in all these things. It's just not possible. Or I either do nothing or I hire an agency, which is, you know, I don't really have the budget for that. But there's actually a lot of in-between state. And these days, I think with Upwork, with Fiverr, I didn't realize this before, that you could hire an expert, someone at a very reasonable rate to say, you know what, I really want to be able to learn and do a lot of things on my own, but I just need a partner, someone I can learn from, you know, cheaply, you know, with a relatively low hourly rate. And you can actually learn a lot from that person, believe it or not. And you're not alone. Having a partner, having someone send you an email, tweak something for you to show you the way, or do some Loom videos, is actually goes a long way. I think the loneliness as a creator is real. Like, as much as I enjoyed, I think I enjoy it more than a lot of other people, but I do hear the thrill of being a creator, but the fear of loneliness.
Yeah, that's you know, I think COVID probably accelerated that and amplified that feeling for a lot of people. But yeah, you know, I mean, sometimes I find as a creator, you're looking to connect with people like each other, like us right here. That's why I'm glad we're connected. But, you know, try and go to these conferences maybe once in a few months or something. But yeah, I think I'd love to hear your opinion, Faye. I mean, I think you've been doing this longer than me as a solo creator. What are your tips for, I guess, dealing with that loneliness?
Yeah, the loneliness, first of all, is, I think it builds stamina of, you know, what it means to be a creator. So connecting with other people is one thing, but I also think the idea of that nature is always around us, like we forget that sometimes. You could be living in a beautiful place or we're at busy city streets. Get out there, actually, you know, because when it comes to when you get stuck with design or thinking about thumbnail or like keywords, that feeling of getting stuck, it is not always comfortable. And by staring into the screen and just like train yourself that way is actually not always effective. So I just take a walk outside, listen to podcasts, music, or sometimes nothing at all. And the other, like I mentioned before, is having partnerships. Herman, you know, Anna, Rose, my partner Adam, they've been there, some of them since the very beginning, some of them like, you know, caught me halfway through. Having that little community. And by the way, I really believe in having like just even a single accountability partner, guys. Like, don't think of a community as like 180 people there to like root for you. You don't actually need that. Sometimes that's like less effective. You know, people are not really as invested in what you're doing anyway. Thirdly, reaching out for collaborations, reaching out to other creators, like what I'm doing with you, Kevin, because I know that we're not alone. And you won't believe me until you actually reach out to people. And it immediately, we got on the Zoom call, 30 minutes, we'll be like, oh my God, we can talk about this forever. That's why I said, let's go live stream. So I think there's so many ways to connect with nature, connect with other creators and people, and to not feel alone.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, fantastic advice, Faye. And you know, I guess what could you tell someone where, again, going back to your podcast, you've had hundreds of guests, right? Even names like Seth Godin on there. And I mean, how do you, what would you say is how would someone start something like that? So what is your, I guess, what would be your advice to say, hey, how do I, you know, when you're reaching out to people, because I often hear people say, well, why would anyone want to collab with me? Or why would they want to come on my show? I don't even have a following or anything like that, right? Can you kind of talk a bit about your journey, how you got started there and, you know, how you built something with so many episodes and so many guests, and you're so, the most important part, you're so consistent with your guests, right? And so, yeah, I'd love to hear a bit about, and I'm sure people would too, how you sort of do that.
Yeah, so in 2014, I had the urge. I think we look for pockets of inspirations, right? Like sometimes we all wait for, oh, the shiny moment, and then I feel like this calling. It doesn't really work that way. For me, the funny thing is like I'm proud to be proud to be Chinese. I'm proud of my culture. That's why I don't even want to blur my background so people can actually see during live stream the beautiful artworks done by my mom. And I realized as a result, you know, what's funny, Kevin, is the marketing agency I was working at the time, even before, you know, for years, people walk up to my desk and they say, Faye, you know, we're in downtown Boston. Could you take me to have some dim sum? And I love that because I love food. I love showing other people like our culture and, you know, dim sum, just like, you know, tapas. Yeah. It's like so cool, so cute. And we then just launch into these conversations. You know, what's so crazy was I've taken people that I don't think I would naturally connect or even agree with out to dim sum just because they really wanted to eat. And by the time they start tasting the food, whether they like it or they don't, like crazy things come out just in those moments. And at times I was like, wow, that's so cool to be able to film this, to be able to record this. And then I realized that when people feel like when they can be vulnerable in front of you, when they can be authentic, those are the stories that should be shared with the world. And frankly, I didn't really have a strategy, monetization strategy, the business I'll build from, like, I didn't think about, I just didn't know how I could possibly build a business out of that. So that was really the beginning of my podcast. And trust me, Kevin, a lot of people criticized on the trajectory of Facebook, be like, you know, you should really pre-record 7 episodes. And it's not about having fun, you know, but frankly, it got me started. If I had to think about analytics and measure everything and then redirect the conversation in ways that could generate me money and revenue, it would have been a very different project. So that's how I got started. So I tell people, frankly, choose something that you are passionate, you really actually love doing. Don't worry about the audience. Reach out to other smaller creators. Go on YouTube today. You can actually follow people who have a few hundred subscribers instead of a few hundred thousand subscribers. You can start there and just connect because people want to share their stories. Most people have never had the opportunity to talk in this way, to make eye contact, to gaze into each other's eyes, right? Even we're actually gazing into the virtual cam right now. Yeah, it's very powerful than you think. There are way more people who will say yes to you than you think.
Yeah. So what I got was this amazing. And so the super secret also is dim sum.
Culture, connection, chocolate, doesn't matter, right?
I joke, but no, that you're absolutely right, Faye. I think what's so powerful there is, you know, there's no perfect time. You don't have to have it all figured out from day one. You will figure out more, and I think along the journey than sitting in a room for months trying to figure it out before you start.
Right? Yeah. You know, one thing I really want to kind of get into, one thing, Kevin, that comes up all the time is like, I really want to do this. I really don't have the time. And I'm not a parent, so I cannot judge. I really don't any better. But I have many friends, my cousins who, you know, one of my cousins has like a newborn baby and they're sleeping very little. And we're all like so soaked up in love. Frankly, as a content creator in that environment, I go, wow, it is tough, man. I don't know how this could be possible. Yeah. And could you maybe talk about your experience and your belief that people with a part-time, full-time job can actually start something and can actually sustain it and run it? I want to give people hope that they can do that too.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, I think the first thing is to set the right expectations, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think you need to understand that obviously, if you were doing this full time versus if you were doing this part time and or you had more obligations in your life, like children or whatnot or any other extracurriculars, that of course it's going to take you longer than if you weren't doing it. Like, I think that's fair to say. And so I find that sometimes people's biggest point of failure is just not having that expectation up front that, you know, the goal is not the end state. The goal sometimes I always like to say is like, maybe you should set incremental goals. Like, hey, my goal is I'm going to make 10 pieces of content. Mm-hmm. That is my goal. And I'm going to learn a lot in that process. And then another incremental goal, right? So I think that's one thing, right? It's like, do you have the right perspective even before you start doing this part-time? So that's number one. But then from a logistical standpoint, the truth of the matter is, you know, I've built my channel completely part-time when I was doing that, right? And when I had a job I have my first child and he's 3.5 years old. And yeah, it definitely is a challenge. So I would say two things, right? My two biggest tips are Pareto principle, right? 80-20. You cannot do everything you want. You can't do everything perfectly, right? So I think you need to understand, hey, what are the things that are going to get me the most impact? And then how do I get to a point where it's quality output, but it's not perfect output. So I think those are two things to keep in mind. And then I think the other point is, and Faye, you talked about strategy. I think you have to be very meticulous about the kinds of content you're producing, right? When sometimes people are just doing a lot of different random things. One day they're blogging about their picnic and next time they're talking about their iPhone they bought and, you know, then it's about their business or whatever it is, right? And it's the algorithm gets confused. People get confused. And most people probably know this by now that, you know, there's a level of specificity you need to get to. But I do think that just taking the time to say, hey, I'm going to produce one video a week. I'm going to film it on Monday. I'm going to edit on, you know, on Tuesday. I'm going to do this on Wednesday. And then you just get into systemized. You got to get really, really systemized and you have to find that pocket. And when it comes to your family, I'll just say, I think you need to get the support with, potentially, you know, if you have a spouse or whatnot to say, hey, I really want to build this, and I'm gonna. This is my work schedule. This is what I want to do on the side. And I'd really, you know, if you could help me out, and then, you know, if you could watch, you know, the dependents, if you have children and whatnot, hey, can you watch them these days? And I'm gonna work on these days, but then those days, if you need to do things, so it just takes a lot more planning and whatnot. You know, like I often joke, my brother just had a kid, right, and he had his son, and he's only 3 weeks old. And like people who are not yet parents, the joke I always make is I go to them and I say, hey, you know those Sundays where you wake up in the morning and you're like, hey, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? You're never going to have that again. just the look of horror on their face. No, having children is amazing. And as I would just say, you know, just jokes aside, that it's, you do just need just a little bit more into, you got to be really intentional. You know, you can't kind of just go at that pace you were when you had a lot of time. You just have to be really intentional.
It's a great point. And I know that this could make some, you know, couples' relationships stronger or weaker, right? And I think if you are in the right relationships, frankly, I think it's really exciting for your partner to hear about your endeavor and actually putting work into it and set schedule, like you said. And a lot of the parents I know who have worked with said, literally, Faye, I'm maximum, I can set aside, you know, maybe two nights a week, you know, 2 hours. And then later on, they always tell me I was being too ambitious because I really truly had 1 hour, or I wake up like super early in the morning. I've worked with nurses who literally would manage their social media like from 5 to 6 a.m. before they have to get ready for work. So these struggles are real. But once you're able to build a personal brand, going back to the beginning, I cannot begin to tell you how worth it that is. It's not just for the fame, oh, getting on, you know, HBR or like being mentioned in Forbes. None of that really matters. Those are like temporary validations. And people might like, oh, that's great. But I think the real change is like the value you're able to bring, the different angles that you have. And it is nearly impossible to be original these days. You're going to look up, so you have an idea, you look up on Google, there are probably like 3 million pages, but I like what Sarah Cooper has taught me, and it's so important. It really stuck with me for all these years, is you have to remember it hasn't been done by you. And that is so, so powerful. And I think looking at our background, you know, Kevin, I don't know exactly, you know, where you grew up, what your parents are like. You're in Toronto. I'm in Boston originally. I'm a girl, you know, growing up in a big city in Beijing. Our unique backgrounds are so 100%. Interesting if we can distill that in our content.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, I always talk about this kind of concept. I have it where I akin it to like a map. You know, often if you're on any social media platform, you're going to see people telling you that you need their three-step process. And I think it's what makes things, hey, just do these three steps and you can succeed. And I think that's what makes people feel like, well, how am I going to stand out? Because, you know, you're just being taught that everyone should just do the same thing. But to your point, and it's 1,000%, I couldn't agree more. It's about discovering what's unique to you. You know, maybe you have, how do you combine, like, for example, like you just talked about, Faye, like you bring your experience from the tech world into what you do now. And there are concepts and things that you've learned and principles that someone else teaching what you teach might not be able to share. And likewise, I bring those same learnings, and, you know, people I've worked with, you know, I've worked with someone, and she was actually a chef in the army. And yeah. And you know, and she had a lot of discipline, and basically the short version is she had learned a lot of discipline and organization, and she runs a program now where, she's like, hey, you don't, you know, the reason you're not losing weight is because of meal prepping. And she kind of teaches a more disciplined, rigorous method to kind of do, because any diet will work, but any workout plan will work. But the reality is diet is where 99% of people fall off. If you're working out every day, doesn't matter what you're doing, it's going to work. Right. And so basically, you know, she thought about her unique background, you know, as a soldier in the army and the experiences she had. And she's bringing it into something like the nutrition world, which might be one of the most saturated kind of, you know, fields you could be in. So I 100% agree that you have to really reflect on your unique experiences.
It's so true. I mean, I'm going to like do a quick shout out to Melissa Kwan. I did a recorded interview with her yesterday, and her last name is K-H Kwan. Let me see. K-W-A-N, I think. And she is a master at crafting stories and messages. She's the founder of eWebinar. And I couldn't believe it. Kevin, if you haven't followed her on LinkedIn, I highly recommend it. She's been writing was daily and then down to weekly with these stories, but with her unique background as a bootstrapped CEO founder for three different companies. And wow. She's now, you know, living in Amsterdam with her husband. They're going to be living more permanently in Bangkok, making a second home. And she talks about entrepreneurship, but it's all about stories. And it's something I feel so hooked. Every time she publishes something, I read from beginning to end, no matter, it really catches me instead of me wanting to move on to my, whatever the next to do is on my checklist. And that is such an art. And yet in all her posts on LinkedIn, she does not mention eWebinar, her business. There's no call to action to work with me or anything like that. It's her life story. And yet I know precisely how much her revenue is increasing as a result of it. Because as soon as she posts something, the number of comments, Kevin, is like 60 comments, 100 comments.
Wow.
It's mind-blowing. It's so masterful. Seriously.
I think you raise a fantastic point. I find like the humanity in digital marketing has been like it's so devoid. Everything is just like templates and just automations. And I love automations and AI, and I want to talk about it if we get there.
Oh yeah, right? yeah.
But I do think that there's still, you know, stories are have been around since the dawn of humanity, and it's one of the most compelling ways to connect with people. And if you're a great storyteller, I think it's mm-hmm. probably one of the hardest skills to master, but it's so powerful. And I find like the shortcut sometimes is just to be authentic.
True. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, our stories and storytelling skills is what make our content unique. And I do want to take a moment to talk about AI automation, because I think throughout the theme here, we are very being transparent and honest about the fact that no business actually runs completely on its own with no work. So, you know, we create business that run on autopilot. There are different ways, you know, membership, parts of membership, and, you know, affiliate marketing. But I want to invite Kevin, you to talk about, you know, autopiloting or maybe using AI to assist with content creation, ideation, strategy, whatever comes to mind.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're talking about YouTube, right? And one of the things you can do, and again, everyone's going to come, I noticed with AI, everyone's going to come at this with a different level of experience. There are people who are like, hey, what is ChatGPT? And then there are people who, you know, pay for the premium version, and they're up on every single AI tool, right? So I'm just going to talk about it at a level where, you know, maybe at a beginner level, whereas, you know, if you could use something like ChatGPT, which is free, it's an AI chatbot, and you could literally say, write me the script for a YouTube video about X. Mm-hmm. And that will give, now, should you use that exactly? No, I think you need to personalize it, but it would literally write you the script. And then you could say, make me a 60-second TikTok video about this. So just right off the bat, you would be amazed to see the amount of content and things you can do. You can do everything from write me an email, write me a contract, write me a this. So all the tasks in your business, you can kind of accelerate them using AI. So I think that's the most obvious use case that I think, you know, it just considering ChatGPT only got popularized, what, like last November, basically? Yeah. And now everyone is using it. So I think if you're not using it, you're doing yourself a disservice. And, you know, and I bring this up to say, I think, you know, pure automation, like this happens and then this triggers like, you know, like email sequences and funnels and things of that nature. Like, I think that's been around for a while. And I think those are the things you should always build in, right? If someone buys a product, of course, you should send them a sequence of emails. Or if they get your lead magnet, I think those are those automations that can really help your business. And we talked about, but then I think there are, which I call which I like to say are like almost semi-passive, or they're systemized rather than automated. I like to separate like systemized rather than automated. I think systemized things are like YouTube, where yes, you got to create that video for the first time, but then after you've created it, as you've talked about with your videos and mine, you're getting traffic now on autopilot. Yes, you had to do the initial work, of course, but and so things like ChatGPT can help you. I have, you know, Faye, you and I are both familiar with the tool repurpose.io. I know you're actually making a different but similar tool that's pretty awesome, which is actually funny enough. I don't know where you are in the journey, so I won't say too much about it, but
all good. No, we could talk about anything that comes to mind. Okay. I'll leave Pod Intelligence in the comments here for anybody who's interested in learning more.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like that would be, you know, that tool right there, from what I understand, like this conversation, we've gone so wide on all of these different topics, and with Faye's tool, you'd be able to figure out the exact segments and the different, and it'll separate out all those topics for you by keyword. And you'd be able to take those individual snippets, which is amazing, right? Just think about the work that would go into doing that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so while it's not 100% automated, like I think it's that acceleration and amplification. I find, you know, pure automation is, you should do it when you can. But I think also another, you know, almost like a side to that is, how do I use smart tools that can accelerate things like AI writers, like, you know, like there's other tools that can syndicate content for you and distribute it for you. You post on TikTok, it'll post 5 different places instantly. You know, Repurpose.io is one of my, good friends with the CEO there. So I'll give a shout out to him as well. So there are, yeah, tons of great tools that can do so many things. I think it's like the wild, wild west, in the sense that every month there's like a handful of new tools and you're like, what? Like, I'll just say literally this week, I asked ChatGPT to create me a calculator. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a task that I would have had a programmer do, and I'd have to find someone on Fiverr. But not only did it save me money, but it saved me time. I've fiddled with it maybe 30 minutes, but I got a complete coded calculator for me in 30 minutes. And it's just, you know, your imagination is the limitation sometimes with some of these AI tools.
Yeah, absolutely. The discipline it takes to learn something new, you know, how much time, let me turn that into a question, Kevin, like how much time do you find yourself as a parent to set aside time for purely learning discovery, new tools, like, oh, a little uncomfortable, like that could include new prompts as well, versus kind of, and really then how do you eliminate, kind of filter out the tools that you really like, even a particular function within or feature within the tool that you really like, to integrate that into your existing workflow? I'm really interested in how you think about that.
Yeah, I think there's two ways, right? I think there's always, you know, you don't know what you don't know. So that's kind of like the discovery. But I'll start with like problem centric, right? I might be doing some sort of task and I'm like, shoot, there's got to be an easier way to do X, yeah, right? And I think that might take me down the journey of, hey, how do I do X? And I find, oh, there's a tool that'll help me do X. And then you kind of learn that tool. And often those are the exact content that I put in my channel where I'm doing my tool tutorials and whatnot to share those learnings. So I think there's one where it's very much, you know, kind of as a result of something I need to get done. And then I always try and it is harder to do this one. I'll be honest. The you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, there might be some blogs I read and I try and stay up, you know, check out some forums and stuff, but it's you know, and sometimes I'm like, I wonder what I'm not using. That's awesome. Like the other day I heard about, it was last month. I was on, on a business trip and it was with a bunch of different creators. And one of them were talking about a walkie-talkie app. And wow. So, yeah. And so, you know, unlike, you know, WhatsApp, basically picture this, it's a walkie-talkie app where it's like, you can send quick messages and they use it to support their customers. And so it's like, and so I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing. Right? But it's so awesome. I think there's a graphic you can find it, like marketing tools, and it shows you every year how many more. I don't even think they can update the graphic anymore because there's probably like 10,000 or 20,000 now. So yeah, I think it's, I think the best way is to kind of just focus on the problems you have and think about, can I do them more efficiently? And then that way I find you're motivated to want to learn because you're like, I need to solve this problem now. So, but you know, I think it takes a higher level if you can also then be like, no, but I also need to find out what I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah, so true. You know, these days I agree, like looking at all these fancy AI tools, it is so easily blinding. Be like, oh God, I can't take this anymore. Or, okay, it generates a great picture. So what is the question? Like, oh, it's cute. Like, really cute puppy. It's generated by AI. All right, what am I going to do with that? But for creators, especially for people who are getting started, once you build your experience, you can batch your work together. But I got to say, like, I'm just as lazy as everybody else. Like, something worked out great. And dinner is ready. I'm not going to sit here and analyze and like capture it and like, you know, document it. No, but it actually, that extra discipline, noting yourself after dinner, I'm actually going to write down, capture somewhere, you know, years ago, it was like Evernote. Nowadays, I just use Google Doc, whatever, to capture what's really worked and having that internal dialogue, but something like really visibly captured is super helpful. I was finally disciplined to do this because I, you know, run a team of like 3-4 people and then people are doing different types of works and you know, virtual assistants as well. Like, you can't just like give it to somebody to say, you should just be able to read my mind and do it efficiently, accurately each time. You have to document it. So as a result, I can see, oh, that's an AI tool. Here's a feature and here's how we include it in this process that we currently have. My VA may also ask me why this didn't work. And you go, it's a collaborative process, but as much as we want, we don't want to think about it. I think that's how we actually grow as individuals and as a group. So I just want to share that before time is running out, Kevin. Sorry.
Yeah, I'll just quickly say one quick thing. That's fantastic. And I think, you know, to your point about if you want to start to systematically remove yourself or focus on higher value things in your business, then of course documentation, like you said, is great. And I find another side benefit of doing that is often those templates you create for yourself, you can use them as lead magnets and as extra offers in your content for other people to use. So the use, you know, it's definitely worth the time, and I'm impressed that, you know, you discipline yourself to try and do it after dinner sometimes.
It's so, no, absolutely so true. Those can be lead magnets. It could be resources for your community, for your subscription model. Exactly. And they're so powerful. And, you know, again, Kevin, I'm just so thrilled that you're here. And before we conclude, is there anything, any takeaways, anything you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, you know, I thought about some things, but I really want to just stress on what one thing you said. I think it's just about getting started. Mm-hmm. I think there's always, you know, there's a saying like there's like 100 reasons why you can't do something, right? Mm-hmm. You only need one reason why you can. And I find that when there's so much to learn in this online business world, and I don't want to minimize that, but I find that once you get the momentum going, you just kind of fall into it. You start figuring it out. But I find like the biggest thing is that apprehension to get started. So whatever your passion is, I think that it's more possible than ever to get started. It's easier than ever. There's less risk than ever. It's usually just a computer, maybe a couple of $100 to register a domain and do other small things to get a couple of tools. But yeah, I think it sounds like that's a struggle for sometimes for your audience, Faye. So I just wanted to say that believe me, I've done it part-time. You know, I have a child and it is possible. Just have the right expectations and just get started. Have fun with it.
Yeah, have fun with it. You're not going to regret it. So thank you so much. What a great final message. And for those of you who want to learn more about Kevin's work, I've listed a lot of resources and links in the description below wherever you're watching this. So please connect with Kevin everywhere if you could learn more about what he does. And if you want to learn more about full stack content marketing, there is a link there as well if you're so intrigued. Until next time, guys. And thank you. We're going to conclude today's live stream. Bye.
Thanks, Faye. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Kevin.